So, Mark.
Yes, Alan.
We're going to change things up.
Are we?
Yes, we are.
But I just changed one over last week.
Well, you know, I know that's more often than usual, but that's not what we're changing.
Cool. Alrighty then.
We're going to be changing the format of our little show here and be a little less tech-centric and probably not quite as expansive on the entertainment front.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, you know, trying to stay completely current and of the day, we're going to jump into the Wayback Machine and start looking at films of the past.
Yay!
Primarily from 1970 on to about now.
Excellent, because that is what shaped us.
You know, it is. And I think it's going to be a really, really cool journey back through time. I think that we were fortunate enough to grow up in a time where film was pretty interesting. I mean, you think about the base of where our movie interest started from and sort of where it is now, and it'll be interesting to see how it's sort of grown, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, kinda.
Kinda, yeah.
Ish.
But I think it's going to be an interesting journey. So each episode we're going to do a year. Those may run long, so a year may be two episodes. We're going to start next week with 1979, or at least we hope it to be 1979. There's a little bit of research and viewing that we want to do before we jump into it.
Yes, and you guys would be surprised at just how hard it is to find movies at your local rental place.
Well, I think that's what's going to make this little experiment all the more interesting. I mean, you and I went to the video store tonight and we took a look around, and basically if it didn't come out before the year 2000, it wasn't on the shelves.
Unless it was like a special edition, like they had like a special edition of Sound of Music there. I know that's 1965.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know.
Something that's just, yeah, I mean, the only thing that you're going to find that predates the 2000s is something that has gone into the classics canon, and, you know, you're Gone with the Wind, your Casablancas, your...
I didn't even see any of those, though.
I know. Good thing they came out before 1978. But
I did see a couple of movies there that have been re-released as like digitally remastered and stuff. Like there's the Blade Runner there.
But that came out last
Star
year.
Wars. Yeah, all the Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
They've all been remastered and reissued.
Yeah, and
that's the thing, reissued.
I think that movies now have become so devalued that, you know, if they're only as good as their opening weekend box office or their first week of DVD sales. And there's been a lot of great film in our lifetime, so why not go back and take a look at the stuff that really seems to be kind of falling through the cracks and being forgotten about. And I know that just taking a look at you know, a list of the films that came out in 1979, there's a lot of gold to be mined there.
Yes, and strangely, people only remember parts of it. like we were talking earlier tonight about Apocalypse Now, and how it seems to be shining far brighter than, say, a movie like Kramer versus Kramer,
which was the movie that actually won the Academy Award that year. Both
exactly.
Were nominated, but Kramer versus Kramer won. I think it's going to be an interesting journey. Like, do you have any kind of do you think are there any sort of themes, or do you have any kind of hypotheses that might be going to be sort of eked out through our journey?
I think that as the movies progressed, our attention spans got a lot shorter, so I'm expecting to see that.
Yeah,
and because we are the original MTV generation.
Mm-hmm.
So,
But yeah, and a generation that grew up with 70 cinema, I mean, which is very contemplative, very character and mood driven, you know what I mean?
Yes, brooding.
Yeah, there, you know, there wasn't the foot on the gas pedal the way that there is on films now. Movies really allowed themselves to take their time to get the message that they were trying to get across, rather than beat you with it.
Yeah, like one of my very first DVD purchases was Steve McQueen's Bullet. And I remember watching that when I was a kid, going, this is a fantastic movie. And it has one of the original best car chase scenes ever in a movie. And I was watching it after I bought it, and I'm like, wow, is this ever slow? I'm falling asleep.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's going to be several things that we're going to see over it all. I think one is that, you know, Steven Spielberg single-handedly destroyed the movie industry. There, I said
Well,
it.
but he did make it so that kids anywhere could believe that they could be the hero.
And destroyed the movie industry.
Right
See,
on.
my theory with that is, you know, he was the one that, you know, broke the $100 million barrier. He's the one that created the blockbuster, which, you know, kind of drew focus to a little more focus to box office take. And then in what was it, 85, when Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom came out? Something like that.
I don't know. Not quite sure.
We'll get there eventually, but you know
Yeah.
the PG-13 rating was put into place for that film, and now we have so many films that, well, everything's about weekend box office take, first opening weekend box office take, and flying under that R rating and hitting the magic PG-13. It really has homogenized film, so it's going to be really interesting to see where those benchmarks were hit and sort of what the aftermath of that has been.
Yeah, now that you mention that does, oh, and the MPAA and their stupid rating systems. Ugh.
Well, and that's the other thing too. I mean, we're going to be starting in 1970, which is basically shortly after the MPAA began rating films. Sort of the explosion then, because, and that's the cool part. I mean, like, because during the 70s and stuff like that, there were movies that were unabashedly made for adults. They weren't adult movies, but they were made for adults. I mean, like, they weren't porn.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be, that's another thing too, is, I mean, we're gonna see that change where, you know, there was movies made for kids and there was movies made for adults. And there wasn't a lot of worry about crossover. Now
And
everything is
they didn't have a
about.
problem making an R-rated movie either.
No.
Like, look at Blade Runner in 82. That was the very first movie I ever snuck into, because I felt I had to sneak into that movie, and I am fucking glad I did. Changed my life, changed the way I watched movies.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're going to see so much change, and it's going to be interesting. And I think that, you know, it'll be really cool to look at, you know, how the films of the day reflected, you know, the times that they were in. I mean, it's not gonna, I mean, we're starting in 1979, which is kind of cool because, you know, you had the Chernobyl incident and you had the China syndrome all happening in the same year, but things don't generally happen that kind of close together, you know what I mean? It's
And what's strange is that fiction predated fact there, and not the other way around.
But, you know, it'll be interesting to see, like, what was it? When did Platoon come out? Was that about 80? That was around 85 or something as well, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, that's only that at that point is really when there was some open discourse happening about what happened in Vietnam that wasn't politicized. So it's stuff like that that's gonna, you know, it's gonna be interesting to see how big the safe zone has either, well, it's actually kind of shrunk quite a bit. I mean, because you take a look at the events of 9/11 And only a few short years after that, you had what is it, Flight 93 or United 93, and World Trade Center come out. You know, two films about that event where, you know, like I said, there's a big gap between Platoon and the end of the Vietnam War.
And now, well, I think it's because Hollywood has become bankrupt for ideas as well.
Well, or maybe a little less sensitive.
Well, trying to cash in on the market, because look, this air quotes war in Iraq is still on, and how many friggin' movies have there been about that?
This year alone, there has been Valley of Alaya, Rendition, or no, Redacted, yeah, and Rendition, and yeah, you know, there's a half dozen movies that have been about the Iraq War. So yeah, you know, but that's sort of what I mean is that, you know, there was that sort of meditative time where I think that maybe you need that kind of distance, because Platoon was such like. I'm not a fan of the movie. I don't like war movies per se, but I respect the accolades that it's gotten and the critical response that it's gotten. And you almost
It
sort
was
of
a
need,
powerful movie.
well, yeah, but you sort of need that sort of time to get enough distance from it to be objective about it, where, you know, where it's not going to be about the politicians and everything else, that it became more personal stories.
It is going to be propaganda,
Yeah.
which I think I haven't watched either of them, the World Trade Center or Flight 93, but I think that because it is so close to the time, there is going to be a little bit of propaganda in there too, and
Yeah, I haven't
fascism and.
seen either of those either, so I couldn't venture to say whether or not either would contain that kind of propaganda.
And that's just it too. It's like I'm not interested in seeing them,
No.
because when it happened, I was glued to my computer for every minute that I wasn't at work, getting constant live feed audio from like the news radio places on the internet, and I became numbed to it.
Yeah.
And now I don't want to say I don't care, but I have no interest in it.
I think that, and I think it's still too close. Like, you know, it changed. I'm not going to say it changed the world, but it definitely changed things here in North America, where, you know, we were kind of knocked off of our little safety cushion, and we had to sort of look at the dangers that were in the world in a way that we never had to before.
Yeah, because there's countries that have had like terrorist attacks for like decades.
Oh,
And
yeah.
this was America's first actually on soil.
Well, no.
Well, not quite first, you're
No,
right.
there
Yeah,
was one
because the
back
World
in
Trade
like
Center had the
93 or something like that, yeah.
and they had the oh they had that building get blown up by that American as well.
Yeah, that in Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, there we go.
So yeah, I mean those sort of things have happened, but you know, I think it really brought the situation that has been happening in the Middle East to our, well, not to ours because we're in Canada, but you know, to our neighbor's doorstep, and sort of made us look at where our place in all of this was, is where I don't think there's been enough time to look at that objectively in cinema.
I know, because look at World War II. During the war and shortly thereafter, and even for years after, they made like super pro-American movies about the war. Everybody else's contributions were marginalized at best. It's been, what, 60 years before somebody put out movies from like the other side of the story, like Clint Eastwood did
Letters
Letters from
from Iwo
Iwo Jima.
Jima.
and Flags of Our Fathers, like the two companion pieces there. I've got them. I still haven't watched them yet, but it's like two sides of the same conflict. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think we're going to have a lot of time to see. Well, we definitely went through a Vietnam period in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the 70s are going to be, I think the 70s are going to be a blast. I think those are going to be the most fun years, probably because there's more films there that I haven't seen.
Yeah.
Or that I haven't seen for so long that I need to see again, and it'll give you a sort of better snapshot of the time. You're coming at the end of the whole counterculture thing, you know, the post Easy Rider, where, you know, independent film was really independent film. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't Bruce Willis in an independent film. And how that worked its way into the whole studio system, and you had films that,
like from the big studios that were art house.
Yeah. And that was more common than an action adventure film or something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Going back to 79 before we even get there, but you know, Kramer versus Kramer was a huge crossover film. I saw that movie in a theater. I wasn't old enough to get it, but that's what was being offered. That's what you went to go see in theaters, because that was what was considered entertainment. It was a bit of a downer, really, but
you're like me. You come from a very small town. You probably only had how many cinemas do you have in your town?
We had the only theater in a 60-mile radius.
Ah, same with us.
Yeah,
Lake Cinema.
Yeah.
And we got to watch whatever the owner of the theater decided to keep in the theater that week, that 2 weeks. There was a while there was a movie that was really, really good or was really popular, and it stayed in the theater for like 2 months. So,
it didn't work like that. We had a very concise schedule, and it was generally done up 2 months ahead of time. And it was cool. You'd get this legal size sheet that was done front and back, and you'd have, like, you know, all of your November movies that were coming to the theater on one side, and then you flipped it over and there was all of December, and everything had been pre-planned. Wow. Yeah. But that was the other thing about the 70s too, was that a movie could stay in a theater for a year, easily stay in a theater for a year.
And do midnight showings. Look at
Rocky Horror Picture Show. Not just midnight showings, dude. I mean, like, we have so many screens now. You think that they can open a movie on 3,000 screens now? That wasn't possible back then.
Yeah.
So you had X amount of prints going to X amount of theaters. So it had to cycle its way through. You know, they would hit the big cities, and then they would start moving into smaller markets. Independent films, and I mean like independent films, movies that didn't have studio backing, were basically distributed by the filmmakers themselves from town to town, where they would book a theater and play the movie at that theater and then move on to the next town the next weekend. So, I mean, a movie like Halloween, like, you know, it didn't play in nearly the same amount of theaters that something like, what else came in out in 78? Superman, the movie.
Or Deer Hunter came out in 78.
Yeah, you know, so those movies, you had to wait your turn to get the screen time to get people in there. So it was a completely different system, and it relied on us not having the short attention span that you were referring to.
Yeah.
You know, when a film was marketed on TV for theatrical release, you couldn't forget about that commercial, because, I mean, it might be a month or two before you got to see that movie. Or if you were completely shit out of luck, it was going to be a year or two before it played on TV, completely edited, and that's how you saw it.
Oh, yeah, I remember those days.
Yeah,
back in the 70s.
Yeah, that was back before HBO, back before satellite dishes. You know, if you didn't see a movie in the theater, you saw it on network television in a completely different iteration than what it was when it played in the theater.
I remember when Star Wars first came to town. It was only in the theater for a little while. All the kids my age and above were all like gagging to see it. But yeah, I don't know. I think maybe like a handful of my classmates actually got to see it in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah.
Whereas every kid in my town definitely saw it in the theater because it came back like 3 times.
Not for us.
Yeah. No, like I saw E.T. in the theater 6 times, and that was,
wow.
I saw both showings all 3 times it came to town.
See, E.T. was the very first movie I went to go see by myself that made me laugh and cry. And yeah, I was a little bit embarrassed because I was a little kid. Yeah. I was like, I'm crying in the theater or sitting all by myself.
I remember going to the North Avenue Regulars that made me laugh so hard I cried. And that's the other thing too. I mean, you know, live action Disney films.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, back then it was, you know, Freaky Friday and the North Avenue Regulars and Escape from Witch Mountain and all that sort of stuff. Now,
hey, Pete's Dragon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now live action Disney films are anything with Dennis Quaid playing a coach.
Yeah, they're all sort of drama with a little bit of light comedy.
Oh, very light comedy. They're all weepers. They're all, you know, family films to make you cry together, you know. It's a very different machine, so it's going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to this. Hopefully by next week we'll be ready to record for 79. It might be 2 weeks, but I mean, I really want to go in as well versed as possible. So,
yes,
you know, I can't say that we're going to leave no stone unturned, but you know, we'll definitely be turning as many as we can.
Because there was a lot of movies and a lot of TV shows happening in 1979 that are going to bring back a lot of memories.
Oh.
So, yeah, if you guys have any, send us a note.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if there's you know, something that you definitely don't want overlooked during those periods, I mean, you know, it's hilarious because, I mean, going through the list and stuff like that, it's some of the more mature, and I don't mean mature as in, you know, tits and sex, but mature as in, you know, appeals to adults, stuff from that era that, you know, I missed the first time around because it didn't appeal to me at all. That, you know, I'm going to be trying to catch up on. Like, I want to see all that jazz before we get to recording the show. Just because, I mean, it was Best Picture nominee, Roy Scheider, you know, got all kinds of acclaim for what it was that he did. And, you know, it was so tied to Bob Fosse and all that sort of stuff. It really interests me now to see it, whereas back then I had no interest in it at all.
I think I saw it when it was on TV one night.
Yeah.
But I didn't watch the whole thing. So I think it was at work. Turned it.
Yeah. And it's going to be interesting, too, to go back and see some actors and stuff like that, you know, you talked about Apocalypse Now. I mean, Harrison Ford had an itty bitty little part in that. And,
yes,
you know,
he did. He looked really, yeah, young, clean shaven. Yeah.
You know, and by
he has a beard now, but
yeah, and by the 80s, you know, he was, you know, Mr. Witness, Mosquito Coast, you know, he was huge. He was a big leading man star.
And even today, he is the number two box office earner after Tom Hanks.
Yeah, if it wasn't for that sad last fucking Indiana Jones piece of crap they threw out, would he still be?
Yeah. Well, if you think like all the movies he's been in, the Star Wars trilogy, the original trilogy.
Well, you're talking about all time. I'm talking about the here and now. Like, if we're talking about back then versus right now, if he didn't put the fedora and grab the whip, he wouldn't be dragging asses into theaters. Let me throw a few titles at you: 6 Days and Nights, K-9, The Widowmaker. you know, whereas before.
Actually, I went to go see I think pretty much all of them in the theater because I liked him.
Well, that's cool, but you are not, you know, the millions of people it requires to make that film number one, because he's missed out on a number of number ones since those days.
Yep.
I'm just saying, we've seen the whole trajectory of his career from, you know, doing little itty bitty parts in American Graffiti and Apocalypse Now to becoming Han
And
Solo,
Force 10 for Navarro, yeah.
to becoming, you know, Indiana Jones, and, you know, to Air Force One, and then watch it start dwindling down from there. We've had a great seat, and it's gonna be fun relegating those tales from the movie house
And
trenches.
it's going to be great as we're going through the years as well and start seeing some of our favorite movies pop up, you know, like Tremors. God, I can't wait for that one. That's 89.
Is that 89? I thought that would be like 90.
1989.
Yeah. No, it's gonna be a blast. I'm really looking forward to it, and I really hope that, you know, the people listening are interested as well. Again, you know, we're gonna be starting off with 1979. So if there's anything regarding that year that you would like to share with us, and we can share with everybody else, that would be awesome. Each time we're ready to go, when we're done the 1 year, we will let you know what year we'll be doing next. So if you want to do some catching up yourselves and join us on this journey, then you're more than welcome to.
Yeah, and like Alan said, each week or each episode is probably going to be going out over about 2 weeks' time. So if you listen to the first week and you have some thoughts and ideas, send us a voicemail or like an MP3 to our email, and that'd be fantastic. And we'll play it on the show, and it'd be just like we have callers.
Or something.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this was this we're not going to really be doing any of the usual stick this time around. This was just sort of a little notifier to let you know that a change is coming, and you know, it's what we've been doing has been fun, but
And I'm still getting earworms.
yeah, well, we'll set you up with your own little personal blog where you can share those.
yeah.
Because we're gonna be this is gonna take, I mean, these are gonna be episodes dedicated to those years, and that's all we're gonna be talking about is 1979. This time.
Excellent. This time.
Yes. Yeah. Can you imagine? Years and years and years of nothing but discussion of 1979. The discussion lasts longer than the year itself. Yes.
fun times.
Yeah, so if you guys have any suggestions or anything, send us an email at hermaphobia@gmail.com, or shoot a comment at
The blog at hermaphobia.blogspot.com.
Can you tell that this was completely on the fly? I didn't even let Mark know that we were doing this, because trust me, if I knew, then I'm waiting for hours.
Yeah.
It's really sad that he has to put on his makeup to do an audio show, but you know, this is the world that I live
Shut
in.
up! Shut up! No one's supposed to know about that. That was our little secret.
Yeah. All right. So,
Holy crap, I gotta go to bed. I gotta be up for work in a few hours.
yeah, this is why I was kind of sprung it on you before you got a chance to look at the blog. All right, so we will talk to you soon, and it'll be 1979. So until then, this is Alan.
This is Mark.
And have a good one.
Bye bye bye.
All my words escape me. They elude me. They hide under things on my desk, and I must turn things over to find them.
When I go to your room, I'll also have a black hole for you as well.
Dude, I don't want to have anything to do with your black hole. Just keep your fucking pants on.
Hey, my pants are already off when we're underwear.